Back, Crusaders, to the Nerd Crusade Podcast. This is episode 64, and this week we're going to be talking about Shogun, the Fallout show, and some gaming news that came out this week. So to start off, we'll continue with our show of Shogun, but I guess I should introduce my co-host Courtney here with me.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, Courtney. So we're going to talk about Shogun. The latest episode we watched was called The Abyss of Life, which is episode 8.
Yep.
What did you think of this?
A lot happened. Well, not a lot happened.
Yeah, pretty much, like, they used the death of Torunaga's son to, I guess, give him, like, a 42 or 49 day mourning period.
Yeah.
So he bought him more, so the son actually bought him more time by getting his dumbass killed.
Yeah.
But, like, throughout this whole episode, they keep showing that Torunaga's sick. Like, he's coughing on his horse while they're going back to Edo. And then he's constantly being, well, constantly weaker. He has to lean up against the little podium when he's sitting down. He has to be helped around everywhere.
Yeah.
He's too sick to go to the funeral of his son. So, like, they're showing him in a weakened state. And the whole big thing is that, like, he's still planning on surrendering. Although he knows that, like, other people are doing that stuff, he knows that, like, Blackthorn is going to go over to Kagayashiki to say, hey, I'll swear my loyalty to you, since you know you want to fight and you want to survive. Torunaga obviously doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no longer in his employ anymore. But Kagayashiki says no, he's going to stand with Torunaga because he doesn't want to, like, betray his lord.
His lord, yeah.
But Torunaga's going to make all his generals sign, like,
a surrender.
Sign a surrender, like, thing. Like, they're going to obey Torunaga and they're going to surrender with him.
Yeah.
You said in the companion podcast, his point of that was to get the generals that were wearing armor at the son's funeral to.
Yes. Because we see a funeral procession going up to Edo. And it's all of what's left of Torunaga's army with all his generals that are still alive, doing this huge funeral procession up to Edo. And then we also see when they do get to Edo, them cleansing the son's body and getting it ready for the funeral prior. And then it looks like the next day, or maybe a couple days later, that's when the big funeral procession happens to bring the body to this makeshift, I don't want to say it, it's like a little shrine where they go to burn the body. And three of the generals of Torunaga's is, instead of wearing funeral garb, they're wearing their armor. As, like, a protest and a sign to, like, we should be fighting.
Yeah.
And in the companion podcast, they reveal that Torunaga was going to have those three generals commit seppuku.
Did they say that there is? Because I didn't get that as being, like, why would you want your three generals to kill themselves?
It would give him more time and to give that illusion that he is surrendering.
Okay. Because I mean,
to,
like,
sacrifice three generals.
Yeah, I just thought, like, strategically, like, fine, one or two, but, like, expecting all three to kill themselves, like, you're losing any effort you have. But yeah, those are the three that are, like, most obviously going to reveal that if you're going to attack, they're going to attack because they're going to show up in armor and shit and not surrender, right?
Yeah.
But instead, what ends up happening is,
He
orders them all to sign this document saying you're going to pledge your fealty to me, that you are going to surrender with me. Kagashi signs it. His nephew, I believe, is about to sign it.
He
does sign it. But then the guy that's Torunaga's, like, oldest friend sits there and, like, and calls him out on it and says, this is bullshit, we shouldn't be doing this. And kind of, like, saying, why aren't we fighting and all that? And then ends up, Torunaga ends up ordering, fine, you need to commit seppuku.
Yeah.
And he ends up just doing it.
You can see, like, Torunaga's eyes, like, don't do it, buddy, don't do it.
Yeah. It's like he calls Torunaga's bluff, and Torunaga doesn't budge. And so he commits seppuku in front of everybody and kills himself.
Yeah.
And that's when, by the end of the episode, we find out that Torunaga's like, yeah, I am going to fight, but my plan is I need to sell this surrender as believably as possible. I didn't want him to kill himself to do that. But he did it. And yeah,
it gave him more time, too.
So they're going to let him mourn Yeah. Him too. I mean, I don't know if they would. I mean, he's not his like family or anything. He's just a friend.
Oh.
But it sells his surrender more so. But like, out of all this, it kind of makes you kind of wonder like, what the fuck's Torunaga thinking? Like, he's gonna. So his original plan is to have this full surrender, show up within the gates of Osaka probably, and launch his attack from the inside out. Obviously, right? Because just throwing bodies at the outside of Osaka just doesn't make any sense, and it would be a waste of an army.
Yeah.
That wouldn't win. But attacking from the inside out, obviously, that's a good way to do it. But tell your closest advisor what you're planning. Because, I mean, even when the Jesuit priest came to talk to him and Torunaga sent him away with a message back to Osaka, his friend's like, yeah, he's going to fight because he wouldn't have told him to go back with a message. Like, he assumed that's what was going to happen. But when I got to the point of, hey, y'all need to sign the surrender... he couldn't take it anymore. It's like, either we're fighting or we're not. What the fuck are you doing? And if we're not going to fight, I'm going to commit seppuku. And Torunaga said, we're not going to fight. And he does it. All to find out that Torunaga's like, I wish he didn't do that. My best friend killed himself. Also, I could sell the surrender, which, yes, helps sell it more. But it's... He lost an important ally in his army because of it. And it's like, I think that's the one person you probably could have told who would have kept it quiet.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, like, his strategy here is kind of fucked.
Yeah. But he told all this to...
Makio.
And he also told her to get prepared. So I think he's going to have her, like, ninja her way in to get revenge.
Well, because I think even Blackthorn had asked, like, her not to go with him.
Yeah.
And she had said, no, she's going to go with him because that's her lord. And the plan is they get inside... And they all fight from the inside out, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Where Blackthorn falls in all this, we have no idea because he's just looking to survive. He thinks that surrender is stupid and believes that's what they're going to be doing.
Yep. And during this episode, we see him go to where they're keeping the rest of his men. And it's like in this slum part of kind of little shanty town.
Yeah, where they're all being drunkards and... Just filthy motherfuckers, basically.
Yeah.
And
so Blackthorn, long story short, Blackthorn turns his back on his original men and goes to, what is his name? I can't say it.
Kashiyagi?
Yeah, Kashiyagi to team up with him.
But Kashiyagi tells him no.
Yep, originally tells him no.
Oh, that's right.
Because in... the end, we see Blackthorn and him on the boat together, forming an alliance.
Yeah, I'm planning on leaving after the guy committed seppuku.
Yes.
Like, that's what he realized. Like, if I go through with this, Torunaga's going to get us all killed in a surrender. We're all just going to have to kill ourselves or die.
Yeah.
Be executed. So he teams up with Blackthorn at the very end. They're on a boat, basically leaving Edo, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to find out that, hey, this is all part of Torunaga's plan, except for some people die he didn't want to die. Ultimately gives him his advantage that he thinks he wants to have. But not to see. And then the only other big thing that happened was, like, the geisha got to, like, look at her land that she's making.
This was so
And, like, Torunaga agreed to give the Jesuit Portuguese priest, like, hey, you can build a church in Edo. But where the land he gave him to build it, like, he's out there surveying, and it's like, oh, who are those people over there? Oh, that's the Madame of the Willow Woods, surveying her land. And it's like, oh, what'd she do? It's like, oh, well, that's, she's going to build her...
Courtesan
tea house right next to where your church is at. Just in Torunaga, obviously, so just to piss off the Christians. And there's going to be a whorehouse next to his church.
I love it. Oh, and there was also that tea ceremony between Makio and her husband.
Yeah, and which is interesting because, like, the tea ceremony is, like, supposed to be kind of like a renewing of, like, commitment and love. And, like, it was clear, like, he was apologizing to her for all his stupid shit. And she let him go through the whole thing to say, yeah, I don't forgive you.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
And, and also to tell him, like, I'm not in love with you. Because he also proposed, like, let us commit suicide together. And she's like, no, I will never be yours. I will never, not in this life or the next.
That's
right. I want to be free of you.
Because everybody wants to get out of the surrender because they all think they're going to be executed and killed and they don't have any trust in what the Lord's telling them to do. Which, it's understandable. Like, this is the same problem with, like, The Last Jedi, right? Where, like, the commanders have this big plan, but they don't tell anybody because for some unknown reason.
Yeah.
And it's like, why don't you just let your, like, your top people know so they don't spark a mutiny against you? Which is exactly what happens in the Star Wars movie where Poe Dameron creates a mutiny to find out, oh no, it was all part of the plan. Well, you fucking idiots. Yeah. Well, Naga, your best friend probably wouldn't have killed himself if you told him what the fucking plan was instead of just,
yeah,
I'm going to surrender, not to let anybody know so I can sell a convincing surrender. Which, yeah, that makes sense, but you got to tell the top people.
Or yeah, at least like one or two people so they don't go off and do something stupid.
Yeah, like your son getting himself killed. Yeah, that bought you an extra 40 days. Great, but your son was killed, which sucks.
Yeah.
And now your best friend has just committed seppuku because he didn't believe in what you were doing because you didn't tell him what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should have enough faith in your generals that they should understand how to sell a surrender.
Sell a surrender and keep their mouth shut.
Yeah. So he obviously didn't go that route because he wanted, because maybe he thinks there's spies there. Maybe there are, but...
Well, yeah, because he has spies everywhere. That's how he knows what's happening in the capital.
But clearly he doesn't trust his military leaders by any means. So, it's very interesting. Like I said, a lot happened, but nothing happened. So, like, there's no progression of what's going on. There's only two more episodes left. So, what we think what's going to happen is the next episode is the surrender and a fight in Osaka.
Well, because it's called the Crimson Wave. So, I would expect that's the big fight. And then the last episode's going to be the big wrap up.
Yeah. So, we'll see how that goes on this week. Yeah, Crimson Sky is the next episode, which is going to be the fight in Osaka.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be the end of it, episode 10, the wrap-up. Yeah. So we'll have to see how that goes. So far, it's still a good show. Still recommend watching. It's very different from the original series that was out in the 70s, 80s. Was that one that came out?
Yes.
But still very, very good and done very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
The next big show to talk about that came out this week was Fallout.
Yes.
Which we finished watching all 8 episodes of it.
Because all 8 episodes are out. I wish they didn't do it because it was so good.
Yeah, I wish they did break it up to have an episode a week to space it out more.
Yes.
But I guess because maybe the shittiness of the Halo show, it's like, hey, guess what? We can actually do an adaptation correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And Amazon Prime and them figured out how to do it perfectly. Compared to the Halo, like, this is night and day, where Halo is just, we bought the brand name and we're doing whatever the fuck we want and not giving a shit about what was already there. Fallout's gone, okay, cool, we're going to take your lore and we're going to adapt it. We're going to tell our own story, but we're going to keep all the factions the way they originally were, keep the ideas of the world and the lore that was built there already there. So, like, this fits canonically within the universe of all the Fallout games. Including New Vegas, which some people are confused on, but it doesn't negate what happened in New Vegas. This does all happen after the fact. I believe this happens, a few years after even Fallout 4 or so.
Yes.
But it's really cool because we get a nice chunk of, like, here's Vault life, here's life before the bombs dropped, here's life after the bombs dropped, here's the Brotherhood of Steel's life, here's, like, what Raiders and people do, the different mutated creatures that they have to deal with somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
But
we don't really see that much into the Enclave, which
you don't
might get
much in the
games season
either.
Two, because spoilers, they have been approved for season two.
Yeah, and the interesting thing we found out today was that there's news out that California is offering them $25 million to relocate the shooting and filming of it to California, because it takes place in California, in the L.A. area, but it's actually mostly filmed in New York State.
Oh,
so California's offering them $25 million to bring the production there instead. Which, I don't know, so you're like, oh, of course they'll take this. Like, I don't know. I mean, the getting offered $25 million is great and all, but there's a bunch of other problems with working in California.
Well, not if you're in the film business, because they have that down packed.
Yeah, it all depends on what the different taxes and stuff and people are going to hire and what they have to. We have to pay people who work in the state there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the fact that the season ends with you seeing New Vegas, so it was not going to season two
more in the desert areas.
Yeah, season two doesn't necessarily going to take place a whole lot in the L.A. area, where like you
no, but
really
it would
monopolize
be...
on using the location.
No, but like I said, they can use the more deserted areas. That's going to be out more out of the way and. Mm-hmm. Less looky lures too.
Yeah, but I figured it all depends. We'll figure out what they end up doing, but
well, and also they have to still travel to Vegas.
Yeah,
or New Vegas.
So the main characters we have here is we have Lucy, who's the Vault Dweller, mm-hmm. from Vault 33, who's Vold experiment is basically like a group of people who are just raised to be do-gooders, but they're in a unique situation where they're connected to two other Volts, Volts 31 and Volt 33.
32.
31, 32, and 33 are all kind of connected.
It's like a little triangle.
Yeah, and they kind of like have a yearly trade of people from Volts.
Yeah. It's either yearly or whenever they kind of need to.
Yeah, I mean, she said like the annual Volt trade thing, so I figured it was like yearly.
I guess so.
Then you have Brotherhood of Steel, which we join up with Maximus, who is a initiate, who then becomes a squire, who then kind of becomes somewhat of a knight. Like, he ends up wearing the power armor, but I don't think they officially give him the knight ranking. He'll probably get it by the end, basically.
Yeah.
And then we have the ghoul, who is the one character who's from pre-war time, who was a movie star, her old Western movie star, who got hired through his wife working for Volt Tech to advertise and sell the Volts to the public. Those are basically kind of like our three main characters.
Yep. And then kind of a side character story we get is Lucy's brother, as he uncovers the deeper truth of the three Volts.
Yeah, because as we know, as game players, we know all the Volts have some nefarious experiment going on with them that the Volt Dwellers don't know about.
Yes.
And we get a lot more of that in, I believe, where else would they end up in Volt 4? That's the episode where see Volt 4, and Volt 4 was supposed to be a Volt...
It should be episode 5 and 6. Episode 5 and
6, yeah. Where Volt 4 was like one of the preview Volts that they were advertising, and it was supposed to be a Volt that was run completely by scientists, but letting scientists run amok untethered by morals or anything, kind of like Rapture and Bioshock.
Yes, exactly.
They ended up creating mutant monsters and shit and mutant people, where like their overseer is a cyclops, and they have people with like ears growing out of their heads and noses and weird shit like that, because all the Volt people have been experimenting.
Original Volt people.
Yeah. But that's where they find out that the people of Shady Sands, who survived the destruction of that city, they've all seeked refuge into that vault. That vault's letting people in.
Mm-hmm. They let people in and out.
Yeah. Basically, they think, oh, we're supposed to capture people and be nice to them, heal their wounds, and let them assimilate to our society type of thing, right?
Yep. Or let them go.
So that's where, like, Maximus, who's grown up in the wasteland, basically meets the Brotherhood as a child after Shady Sands was destroyed.
But we don't know that till the end.
When they go to Volt 4, he learns what Volt life is like and how it's much nicer, how there's something better than the wasteland.
He lived his best life during those,
eating popcorn, eating caviar and deviled eggs.
Oh, man. He loved the oysters, though.
Yes.
He almost got laid.
Yeah, almost. And then, like I said, the ghoul is like this wandering, kind of like a wandering like Western outlaw almost.
Yeah, like a bounty hunter.
Yeah, bounty hunter, who gets dug up basically to go on what the main plot of this is, that everybody's after this one guy who escaped the Enclave with some new technology that could save the world or destroy the world type thing. So he's woken up by some bounty hunters to help do it. He ends up killing those people who woke him up and goes out on his own after the bounty. Lucy ends up running into that guy who escaped the Enclave, and he kind of tells, like, you're crazy for being out here, go back to your vault, and that's where we kind of...
Yeah, go be safe in your vault.
Yeah, that's where he tells her, like, your vault is supposed to be, like, a bunch of do-gooders who always do the right thing type of thing.
Yeah.
And he does explain to her, like, how he knows any of that, but basically, all three of them end up meeting up in the one town that we do see, which is called Philly.
Yes.
Where... That's the scene from the trailer where you have Lucy say, hey, tell me about the last 200 years. And she's like, oh my God, you're a fucking Volt Dweller. That's where they kind of all culminate and kind of shit.
And they kind of, and throughout the series, they not really team up. They'll get together and then break off, get together and break off in different
groups. They run into each other for different things. So, like, yes. They're... The guy everybody's after is in Philly. Lucy's in Philly. Maximus shows up there. The ghoul's there. And shit kind of hits the fan as, like, the ghoul starts shooting people to try and get the bounty. Maximus shows up to fight the ghoul.
So he can get the bounty because the Brotherhood wants him.
And then Lucy is told...
is stuck in the middle because she's up there because she's...
looking for her father
who was kidnapped by raiders.
Yeah. Because that's kind of like where her story starts, is that raiders break into the vault, kill a bunch of her people, and kidnap her dad. And then it goes on to, I gotta go find my dad, which is kind of the plot of Fallout 3, where your father leaves the vault, and then your adventure is you go out into the wasteland trying to find your father. So in Lucy's journey to find her father, she ends up in Philly. All this stuff happens, and then basically is kind of hired or told, hey, take this dude who the bounty's after and get him to Maldives, which is who she's looking for, because that's the person that took her father. Yeah. If you get him there, you'll get your father back. So she ends up kind of taking up that task while the ghoul and Maximus are fighting. Basically the point where like the episode kind of ends with him, so he says, yeah, just cut off my head because I already took some cyanide to kill myself, and it'll be easier for you to travel with just my head.
Yeah,
because what they want is in my head. It's not.
Yeah, because one of his legs gets blown off, so he's kind of hobbling and struggling to keep up anyways.
Yeah, so he kills himself to take my head because he had injected something in his head, which is the piece of tech that everybody wants to get. What I think is really interesting is the episode where they go into the past and we actually learn a lot more about the ghoul's life.
Yes.
And about Maldives and what's and what's actually going on. It's interesting to see that world, which is like, I don't remember what year it was supposed to be, right?
It's 2077 was when the
bombs, yeah, that's right. So it's
when the bombs drop. So this takes
place in 2077, like a few months.
Either a few months or a few years before.
Yeah, probably starts off like a few years, but gets down to like the day the bombs drop.
Yeah.
So he goes from being...
because that's how the starts, is bombs drop.
Yeah. So it goes to showing like how he is a movie star, a Western hero that hadn't had to do movies where he had to be like kind of the anti-hero.
Yeah.
Which he didn't kind of agree with. And then how his wife got him hooked up with the Volt Tech. And then how he kind of starts questioning like Volt Tech's methods and all that. Because his wife's really into it because she wants to secure a spot for their family in a vault. But
that's like, what she keeps telling him.
Yeah, but like when he brings up like simple things, when she says, "Oh, well, there's no dogs allowed in the vaults," like, why aren't there any dogs allowed? Who makes those rules? Because he fought in the war prior to like protect his freedom, so he's very much against the whole communist concept, against people who don't like Volt Tech and all that. But he does raise some questions, like, I spent part of my life fighting in a war to protect my freedoms, and now you want me to go to a vault where I might not have those freedoms? Like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
To the point that one of his old war buddies gets him to go to kind of like a communist meeting, which is actually not necessarily a communist meeting. It ends up being a meeting at a funeral home with Maldives, who is apparently there. We then find out that she's a scientist.
Yep.
Who was working on cold fusion, unlimited power that would basically end the conflict that's happening in the world, which is that everybody's fighting over uranium because this is a world where nuclear energy is what was focused on, some electrical energy.
Mm-hmm.
And fossil fuels. So now the world's on the brink of nuclear war because of all this. Cold fusion would have been the solution to stop it all, but Volt Tech bought her company. It went under his wife's department at Volt Tech, and they shelled the tech, so that the war would keep on going. And
she tries. This war is profitable.
Yeah, because she tries to convince him to like join their cause, or at least hey, spy on your wife. Which he's reluctant to do at first, but then he finally does. Do it.
Yeah.
And that's when
was a great fucking reveal.
Yeah, they give you the big bomb drop there, which it wasn't revealed necessarily in the games at all yet, I don't think. At least not the games I've played. But when he ends up spying on his wife and finding out what's going on, and that's when we find a few reveals in that episode. Like, he goes to her office, finds out he has to be closer to her for the bug to actually work. So he goes and sits in her office while, her secretary Betty, who is actually ends up being an overseer of one of the Vault
33. Mm-hmm.
See a young Betty. He's like, oh, I have a friend. It's a new assistant. He's really excited to meet you. Can I come bring him in? And while she's going off to go get him, he's listening in on this meeting that she's having, that the wife's having downstairs. And that's when, like, you see the guy who in the New Vegas game ran New Vegas. He was the, I think...
Not the casino guy.
Yes, he was the guy with the mustache. Yeah, yeah. He was the guy who ran Volt New Vegas. And you see other heads of all these other companies like Robotech and all these other places that are big companies in this universe. And they're all conspiring to work together. And basically, Voltech is pitching them, hey, if you all pitch in on the Volt program, you can run any experience you want. We have over 200 Volts across the country. And you'll have unfeathered access to do whatever you want with these Volts. And when they kind of start talking brass tacks, that's where you hear like the experiments like, what if we did one with overcrowding? What if we did one with the cast system? Yes. All these weird experiments that pop up, right?
But we didn't hear about the one with the 20 guys, 10 gals, and a panther.
Yeah, and a panther. Yeah, if you look at like the list of Volt experiments, are really interesting, all the different ones they have. But basically, we're seeing like the culmination of what all this is, what the Enclave is, and like, hey, it's all these companies coming together to run Volt Tech. And then the big concept of that's kind of brought up by the New Vegas leader is that, hey, this sounds all fine and dandy and nice, but how do you guarantee it's going to work, right? If the bombs don't drop, nobody uses the Volts, and we can't do anything. And that's where he hears his wife say, easy, we drop the bombs ourselves, force the world into these, into the Volts. And the thing that will kill all our enemies is time. They'll all die in the time it takes for the radiation to dissipate and the world to be livable again. And we'll emerge from the Volts, and then we'll be, we'll have no enemies, and we'll be able to control everything. So the concept was like, we'll kill our enemies by waiting them out. We'll let them all die off.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't actually happen, right? Because people do survive the fallout in various forms that were unexpected, like the ghouls, the people who just survive outside of blast areas anyway, the raiders and the citizens.
Yep.
And then you have the different people who leave the Volts who have their own different agendas throughout all the different games, right?
Yeah.
So hearing that, like, totally brings light, oh shit, his wife's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
We assume they got divorced at one point because the very first episode, like, when they're asking why he's doing birthday parties, the guy says, oh, alimony.
Yeah.
And, like, apparently it looks like he has custody of his daughter. Or maybe he has custody of his daughter because his daughter's working with him. But it sounds like he might be separated from his wife, and that might be a good reason why, that she's suggesting that Voltech just blow up cities as is.
Yeah.
And
also throughout this series, people keep asking him what makes you want to keep living for these past 200 years. And he always dodges the question. He's like, oh, you know.
Yeah, we don't find that out till the very end.
And yeah.
What we, after he eats that big reveal that his wife's with Volt Tech and wanting to blow up the world to secure Volt Tech and all these companies, the Enclave of companies' interest, is when the assistant walks in. And that's when we see the assistant is actually Lucy's father.
Yep.
And that's when we go back to the brothers' kind of storyline and see that, okay, there was this guy back in before the war that kept bugging the ghoul guy about, hey, this new, about how he thinks management, how time's the ultimate killer. That's his pitch, right? And he had this management program that would ensure Volt Tech would stay in control of like
the Volts,
the Volts, and like the group that would be responsible for repopulating the world, right? Because mm-hmm. Lucy thinks their whole point is when it's safe, they'll leave the Vault and they'll repopulate the world and they'll save it.
But save America, not the world.
Save America, basically, right? But turns out his idea was having the three Volts connected, and Volt 32 and 33 would transfer people over constantly. And there are actually people in both those Volts. But when the brother goes into Volt 32 after it's been taken over by raiders, he sees that people have been dead a lot longer than the raider attack.
Mm-hmm.
And that something's going on and they're trying to break into Volt 31. He eventually gets into Volt 31 to see that it's basically almost like a recreation of Volt 111 and Fallout 4, where it's a cryo vault. Mm-hmm. Everybody is frozen in cryo tubes. And it's being run by a Roomba with a brain, which happens to be the guy who is like talking about management and everything. It happens to be yeah. his brain. And turns out that the whole program is that a person from Volt 31 would be unfrozen and would leave Volt 31 to become an overseer of Volt 32 or 33.
Yep.
And they would always make that person overseer by kind of like democratic vote, but they'd use a slogan, when in doubt,
Vote 31.
And always got people to vote for people 31. So all the overseers have always been people from 31.
Yeah. So whenever time's a trouble, vote 31.
Yeah. So like that's when we realized that Betty was an assistant at Vault-Tec, and she's this old lady at the Vault now.
Yeah, she was
overseer of 33.
Yeah, she was an overseer of 33, and then Lucy's dad came over probably just to like help more population
and replace
her because she was starting to get old and probably like, I want to retire a bit.
Yeah, so that's the nefarious thing there is that the two Vaults are being controlled by the management program that Vault-Tec came up with.
And Vault 32 figured it out somehow.
And basically killed each other and killed themselves. Or
trying to get into Vault 31.
Yeah. So, which that was all kept a secret from 33 to the point where later on when they go back to 32, Betty has had them clean. Had
33.
All, or 33 had gone back to 32, they cleaned up 32 completely, and Betty had decided they're going to sparse the population and put some people in 32 and make some people be in Vault 33.
Mm-hmm.
Basically rebuild the program again. And the person that they make an overseer in 32 happens to be another Vault 31 member who had come over and was, she's the pregnant gal from their Vault.
Yep.
She's now the new overseer of Vault 32. Again, another 31 persons in control because they all have kind of program in their head. The purpose of Vault-Tec to constantly always stay in control. And that brings us to the story of Shady Sands, which is that Lucy has a memory of like being out in the cornfields and feeling the sun, but laughing at herself. Oh, it's just the giant bulb up at the top of the vault. But it actually turns out her mother did take her and her brother out of the vault and to Shady Sands, which is which was the first capital of the NCR, which was the New California Republic,
mm-hmm.
which is mainly featured in the Fallout New Vegas game.
Yes.
But they were becoming a new kind of world power, at least, and pretty big. Like, they had their own states, and they had a huge amount of influence to the point where if Vault-Tec came out, they would not control everything. They would have to contend with the New California Republic.
Mm-hmm.
So her father shows up, takes her and her brother back into the vault, and ends up blowing up Shady Sands with, like, a nuke.
Yes.
They don't say where the nuke came from or how he got it, but throughout the game, Vault-Tec has stuff over. Because, like, in 76, which is supposed to be the very first vault that opens up,
mm-hmm.
That storyline ends with, like, you setting off a nuclear strike somewhere.
Ah, okay.
So there are nukes hidden around the world that could be activated if you had the codes or whatnot. Him being part of the magic program, obviously had it, destroyed the competition, destroyed Shady Sands, which was the first Republic of the NCR. The NCR is kind of all we know now is the NCR is kind of in shambles, but it's not completely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that Moldiva is part of the NCR. That's why she broke into the vault and kidnapped Lucy's father, because she needs him to activate the cold fusion tech that was in his head. Because Vault-Tec took it and they encoded it to where only a Vault-Tec lackey would have the code in order to activate it.
Mm-hmm.
This all happens in the very last episode where
shit hits the fan.
Yeah, Lucy ends up at the observatory, the NCR's last stronghold, where it turns out her mother is there as a kind of rabid ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
Her father's locked in a cage, and all the truth comes out. He gives her gives Moldiva the code. They activate the cold fusion, but then the Brotherhood of Steel shows up, and decides to kill everybody. And then the ghoul shows up there too. And since he used to, he's not afraid of the power armor that the knights wear because he used to wear one. So he knows where their defects are.
Yeah.
So he's able to kill them in like one shot. But it all culminates at the end. That's where we find out that the ghoul's whole purpose is he wants to know where the fuck his family's at. Because apparently what we don't see is we saw the bombs go off. We saw him running with his daughter on his horse, trying to get away. Clearly, his daughter and his wife got into a vault somewhere, and he was left out.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't know what vault that they went to or where they're at, and he hasn't been able to find them. And that's what his purpose is he wants to find
his family.
His family. At that point, like, he's threatening Lucy's dad to give up the information, and he ends up like shooting him in the face. And the dad gets into some power armor and basically runs away.
Yes.
And then he invites Lucy to follow him. Say, "Hey, I wounded him because he's gonna run back to his masters, and that's what's gonna give me the information I want to know. Like, hey, do you want to come see your makers, the people who designed all this shit that's been happening?
Or you could stay here and Brotherhood kills you.
Yeah,
your choice. Oh, and FYI, I have the dog now, so let's go.
Yeah. So she follows the ghoul and leaves off.
Yes.
Moldiva turns on the cold fusion last minute before she dies while Maximus is there. And Maximus sees the city of L.A. light up. She basically gave unlimited power to the city of L.A., which is now kind of up for grabs for anybody who can take control of it. Which it looks like is probably the Brotherhood of Steel, unless there's other pockets of NCR there to fight them off. Because New Brotherhood wants to take over, and they'll definitely make a power grab for the scene. That's probably what they're going to focus on.
Yeah.
Lucy's father, the last scene we see, is he's walking in the desert. There's a Death Claw skull on the ground. And you see that he's looking at New Vegas that's kind of in ruins. And he's heading towards New Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Lucy and the ghoul are going to be heading towards, too. Which New Vegas was supposed to be... Vegas was like a city that was untouched by the nuclear war. And was thriving, but something obviously has happened where it's been put in ruins now.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see what happens in season two. Yeah.
But this show was really good as far as like getting the atmosphere, the feel, and like making everything...
The world building is amazing in this show.
And it's how you should do it. So like, if you're not going to do an adaptation where you're going to like retell the same story, which I understand nobody wants to do that because it's kind of boring. Because people who've seen it...
This is how you do it.
...have already known that story. This is, like you said, the way you do it because they just added a new storyline into the universe of canon that fits perfectly and doesn't disrupt anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people think they've rewritten some canon of New Vegas because on the chalkboard in Vault 4, Lucy sees like a timeline of Shady Sands. And it says Fall of Shady Sands 2277. And then It has an arrow to a nuclear explosion.
Mm-hmm.
People think that means the bomb dropped in 2277 when it's actually like the city went in decline because the sign outside the city said the first capital of the NCR.
Mm-hmm.
So the NCR capital moved,
obviously.
So in 2077, the city went to decline. The capital moved, got relocated somewhere else. And then somewhere in the future from that date, the bomb got dropped on the city and was destroyed. So that's when Lucy's father destroyed the city. So it's not that the city got destroyed in 2277, which would put it before the events of New Vegas. It got destroyed after that. The city started falling decline in 2277. A lot of people compared to like the fall of Rome wasn't like in one day. It happened over
a period of time.
And then it fell on a specific day. But it didn't just happen like, one day fall of Rome, boom, happened.
Yeah.
It wouldn't decline first. And like, that's kind of what is implied here. It's just the storyboard is done a little bit differently.
It's dumbed down because it's for children to understand.
Yeah. And then there was a end credit sequence where you see the library card of Shady Shores end in 76.
Mm-hmm.
So which people kind of thought, that means it got destroyed in 77. It just means the library stopped checking out books, or getting books back in 77.
Yeah.
Which would imply a decline in civilization if people were leaving the city or shit wasn't going right. Things like that would have ended up happening. But I'm excited to see where the show goes. So it's already been approved for season two. We're excited to see when that comes out. Like I said, we don't know if they're going to be changing the filming location to actual California or they're going to stay where they're at or do something else. But they've made a great show. The fans all like it. It's gotten really great reception.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can make many seasons out of this if they want. Because they don't have to, like, unlike The Last of Us, where they kind of have a storyline to stick to. And then after they're done with that storyline, then they can kind of branch out if they want to.
Yep.
Since they're using actual main characters from the game The Last of Us. Here, we're using brand new characters. We're just taking the world of Fallout and telling a story within it.
The world, the lords.
Which is exactly what you should do with Halo. Like, instead of doing a Master Chief focused story in Halo, they should have just done a Halo story in the universe of Halo. Would have been a lot more interesting. You could tell a Master Chief centric story, but then you would have to kind of pick and choose where you place your storyline, not to fuck up the lore that's already there. It'd be better off to do something like this, where it's like instead of messing with main characters or main events,
which pisses off your main audience.
Yeah, the people are going to tune in the most for it, right? And then tell their friends to watch it or check it out. Like, hey, you don't like playing games, but you want to understand Fallout, just go watch the show. This will give you a perfect feeling.
Yeah, but after a show, people wanted to play the games, and the sales of Fallout games rose significantly this past week.
And it also brings us to some of the gaming news, which is that Fallout 4 is finally going to get its next-gen update, which will come out on the 25th. It's going to add, I don't know what all the updates are going to do for the next-gen console for the Series X and S and the PlayStation 5. I'm assuming it's going to affect lighting and whatnot. Whether or not it's going to be as good as how Starfield changed its look. I don't know. I hope it does. I mean, that would really elevate the game's look. But they're also adding a bunch of creation content, kind of like the
Skyrim creation.
Yeah, like Skyrim's Ultimate Edition version, Anniversary Edition, added a bunch of creation kit DLC into the game that doesn't break your ability to get achievements and stuff. So they're adding a bunch of stuff from Creation Club. They're not all of it like they do with Skyrim, but a small chunk of things.
Yeah.
And which does include like some DLC missions and stuff too, like that, which should be pretty interesting. But that comes out on April 25th at the end of this month. And then we don't know where Bethesda is at with building Fallout 5. We do know there is something in, they have some ideas for it, because in the making of the show, Todd Howard had said, hey, as executive producer, I had tell him, like, no, we can't do that because we have plans for that type of, for that event. You can't do this because we're going to do, we're taking care of that elsewhere. To keep them on track of making a show that lived in the universe but didn't affect or change with the director of the games.
Which was great that they had Todd Howard and other Bethesda execs be in the writer's room and have their hands and phalanges all up in this project to keep it on track.
Yeah, and like, I thought it was really interesting that our friend was like, oh, well, it's nice that, you know, Microsoft's able to get one show done right.
No.
And I was like, Microsoft didn't do this one. Like, Bethesda pretty much had their hands on this. And the thing is, like, what Microsoft constantly is known for, and if anybody's ever worked at Microsoft knows this, is that they let the pendulum swing way too far to one side or the other. So, like, when they're making the Halo TV show originally, back when it was supposed to be a movie, then a TV show with Peter Jackson making it and whatnot, or Neil Blomkamp making stuff for it, like, Microsoft was very all in, hands on it, like making sure they didn't fuck anything up. And they're basically getting slapped by Hollywood saying, no, you don't do that. You give us the license and we'll make the show for you. We'll make the story for you. You don't tell us what we can and can't do. And that might have been how things were done in the early 2000s, early 2010s or whatnot. But Last of Us has shown us, and Fallout has shown us, as well as the new Halo show has shown us, that things work a little bit differently now. They've released all control of Halo, and we saw the garbage that came out of that. Where Last of Us, they had their hands in that constantly, and even though they changed a lot of things, they changed the story
for the better, I think.
Yeah,
for a better pacing, storytelling wise, for a general audience.
Yeah, and then where Fallout here, Bethesda definitely had their hands in there, always, saying what you can and can't do, and how they had to proceed, and they made a really good 8-episode show. Which, great, they're now already, before it even came out, it was already approved for season 2. And now they have a bidding war between states to where they film it. So, like,
it's great.
That is an ultimate success. To have states bidding against each other for, hey, come film here.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't ask for a better response than that.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's asking to move Halo from Romania to somewhere else because that show's garbage.
Yeah, or come film in, you know, West Hollywood or something.
Yeah. Or come film on the Disney volume or something like that. Halo is a garbage show. I doubt we'll get season 3. If it does, nobody's going back to watch that.
You also have some people go back to watch it. You'll have the hate watchers, just like with the Velma show. And you'll have people that do generally like this show for some reason, come back and watch it.
Yeah, people have no idea what the original lore was.
Yeah, and also never picked up the games. Yeah, the ultimate goal is to have them
buy the other merchandise.
Buy the merchandise.
Read the books. Buy the games. Watch all the other media that's created. When you completely screw that up, nobody wants to look at any of that stuff. Yeah. That's the funny thing is every time I get comments about people telling us how we're hacks, talking about how the Halo show is terrible, it's like, you know nothing about Halo. You clearly don't, because you don't understand why we don't like it.
Yeah.
If you do, you would know. You would understand it.
But also, if it was successful, wouldn't the sales of Halo Infinite and other Halo properties gone up?
Possibly. I think the biggest thing that I would encourage anybody who wants to play Halo would be, like, buy the Master Chief Collection.
Mm-hmm.
Infinite, not so much, because I think the storytelling in Infinite by itself is just garbage.
Right, but that's the newest one.
That's the newest one, but there's also a lot of controversy about how that game is set up as far as live service stuff that's kind of falling apart. Because it's not really a live service, it's kind of just garbage. But that's the Halo game now, right? Like, and that's why I'm pretty sure 343 is putting that on the shelf, and they're not going to make another Halo game for a few years.
Yeah.
So Other stuff in gaming news is that Star Wars Outlaw had its story trailer launch this past
Yes.
week. To kind of mixed reviews. Some people think it's cool. Some people, like myself, like I don't have enough information to make a judgment on it. It's a Ubisoft game, so I'm not exactly going to jump right into buying it right away because the fact that Ubisoft games are kind of almost too handholdy and throws too much at you. Where I like where some game development is going now, where it's not being handholdy. It's like and then you go and explore open world where Ubisoft has these giant open worlds with very specific things for you to find. And if you go outside what
Yes.
they want you to find, there's nothing there.
Yep. Or
But
they'll just put, here's your random collectathon for this particular thing.
yeah, it's really is like the flags in Assassin's Creed all over again. Like, here, collect 250 flags. Like, why do I want to spend my time collecting flags or feathers?
Or
Really,
this useless armor.
yeah, for a reward that's not that great.
Yeah.
But they're also getting scrutiny for like you can get the base game for $70, is what they're gonna sell for, which obviously is AAA game. They're gonna sell it for that. You can get 3 days early access for an extra $30
That's
for
the gold
actually
edition.
$40. It's $109.99. You can get the Ultimate Edition that gives you 3 days access, season pass, some probably cosmetic stuff, and a digital art book for
Oh
$129.
my
Or what
God.
they really want trying to push you to do is subscribe to their service,
Which is the ultimate edition.
which gets you all that stuff plus. But for $17.99 a month, that way you pay a monthly subscription to play all their games and get all the stuff for this. And that's what they Ubisoft wants you to do. They're not part of Game Pass, so this is their own subscription service.
So you'll pay an extra subscription service
But
to
honestly,
pay.
it's like that's not the game might not be worth even well, it's probably definitely not gonna be worth $110. Because when it comes to season pass stuff, like the game's not out, right? So
Right.
there's two missions that they have listed there, which means this is content that they've either not finished or that they've cut out for the season pass. Usually season passes, when they just say season pass for up to upcoming content and they don't have it listed, means like they haven't finished making it. You don't know exactly what it is. When they do list stuff though, and they list more than one, it tells you at least one of these things are already done.
Okay.
And Ubisoft is probably Custom Run character pack featuring additional cosmetics. So that's cosmetics, and then this Jabba's Gambit
It's an
available at launch.
exclusive mission.
So this, yeah, available at launch. So this is available at launch of the game. So that means that's something they cut out for the season pass.
Yeah. So you have to order it to play.
Yeah. So they've cut content out to make you pay extra for shit that they've already made. Which eventually you wait like 6 months to a year. 6 months if the game does poorly. A year if it does really well. They'll come out with an ultimate edition that's going to be a lower price. They'll have everything in it.
Yeah.
Or what Ubisoft does is they say Game of the Year edition, even though their games are never nominated for Game of the Year, and it'll have all their content in it at a much more reasonable price. I don't really have much to say about the story or whatnot. The
Yeah.
game doesn't look next gen to me very much, compared to other games that use more motion capture animation, stuff like that. Interested to see where they go with it, but we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, I need to see more gameplay. I need to see, is it going to be more of an Assassin's Creed type feel, or are they going to try something new, which I kind of doubt for this one.
Yeah, some people have been like, well, Star Wars without the lightsabers and all that just is boring. And I don't think so. I feel like a good scoundrel or a story without Jedi and lightsaber stuff is fine. Like, The Mandalorian is a great TV show. And that's a TV show that has very little to do with Jedi and the Force and all that stuff. It's very exceptional, especially the first season being absolutely none of that stuff in there.
Yeah, the first season felt wonderful. It was basically a 100% Western.
Yeah, so like where this can be like a good like space scoundrel
What?
mission,
Yeah.
I'm more interested like where are the side stuff that they're going to put in this game versus the main plot story, and how are they going to attack the side stuff? Is it going to be go to this planet, here's a bunch of different shit on a map that they have to go track down and figure out to do?
Go fetch.
Did they change their development to be more immersive and emergent? Probably not, because Ubisoft developers were the ones bitching the most about Elden Ring not handholding and Dragon's Dogma 2 not handholding, saying that's bad game development. Where it's like, no, your handholding is bad game development. Let people actually explore the world and find shit
Yeah, or
and
have
be.
that option to be hand-holdy or not be hand-holdy or be less hand-holdy. Have a
Yeah.
slider
So that
option.
would actually like say if you look at Skyrim, right? You look at the Skyrim map, there's, it can be full of a ton of icons, just like a Assassin's Creed map can be. But all the icons that pop up on a Skyrim map, either you're told about it by another character or you've been there.
Yeah, because it's all grayed out. And until you go there, it's
fun to like go through and find all this stuff. And then you look at the map, it's like, wow, look how full and dense this world was. Whereas you open up Assassin's Creed, I'm like, hey, look, it's completely full of shit.
Yeah, here's
where do I world. Where do I go? I don't know where to go. There's just tons of shit to do everywhere. Yep. There's markers on all the maps of places of interest I'm supposed to go to.
Yeah.
Like, it's better that I find the cave on my own and find something interesting rather than there's a marker here. Go here and you find something.
You stumble in, you're like, oh shit, hags.
Yeah, but like you said, like the best way to do it is to like how Tomb Raider's difficulty does it, where like you can set the difficulty and set different sliders on. Like, hey, do you want the map to show you everything? Yes or no? No. Do you want this to be, want combat to be hard or difficult? Like that?
Yeah.
You can change all
that. Do you want puzzles to be easy or hard?
Yeah. That is, I think, the best way to do it, where players can set their own difficulty. Because the people who do like to be handheld and do want to just beat a game as fast as possible need a Ubisoft-designed game where everything's there. But people who want to actually enjoy a game and immerse themselves in the world don't want all that shit there. They just want to find it and explore it and then be amazed when they see, like, oh, there's something I missed. Let me go back and find that thing. That's the enjoyment of video gaming, not checking off a list and getting things done.
Yep.
Reviewers do that a lot because they have to finish a game quickly to write a review about it. Gamers themselves don't need to do that. Let them enjoy the game. So,
well, there's some people that want to bum rush through so they can get to the story so it doesn't get spoiled for them.
Yeah, but I feel like I've been able to avoid spoilers in just about everything possible.
It's called don't go on the internet.
Well, it's like I can go on there and I still don't get spoiled about stuff. I know what to look at and what not to look at. So, I mean, we'll have to see what this is. I'm going to wait till see what reviewers say when the game comes out, or wait to see more. Nothing that they're showing me so far has enticed me to like, oh, I really need to get this game.
Yeah. It's also coming out in August.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I would suspect between now and August, we'll get some gameplay trailers and previews.
And that's if they keep the August 30th date. We're still in a time period that everybody delays shit.
Yeah.
So we could get to this and they could push that back to November, or they push it back even further. Who knows? We'll just have to see what they come up with.
February of next year.
That's a possibility, but we'll just have to see what they come up with and what it's look like. Right now, there's nothing that has enticed me to say, yeah, I need to buy this game immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll come up with something later on that will show me that.
Yeah.
Because everything that showed in the story trailer, none of it was gameplay. It was all just cinematics, which doesn't show me how does gameplay work? How is there vehicle gameplay other than riding a motorbike that we saw already? Is there space battle stuff? Am I free to fly in space, or is it on rails, or is it all cutscenes? There's a lot you can do with Star Wars, and there's a lot like limitations Star Wars games can put on themselves too. So I'll just have to see what happens. But I definitely don't think it's at all worth spending $130 for it, or $110. Just buy the basic version of it. And if you want to buy other stuff, everything's gonna be available in a store later on. Plus, you know, Ubisoft's going to sell pay-to-win shit in their game anyway.
Yeah.
That's how the microtransactions work. Yeah.
So you could buy Java's thing separately, I'm sure.
Yeah, they'll eventually sell everything separately.
The following week or something it comes out.
Yep. But that's our show this week. So next week we'll talk more about Shogun and anything new that we come across.
Yes.
We are watching some new shows right now, like the Renegade Nell. And the Untrue Adventures of Dirk Tipton. I forget. It's a new show with the British comedian Noel, the guy who co-hosts the British baking show and played Richmond in the IT Crowd. He has a new show on Apple TV that we've started watching too. So we'll probably talk about those things next week, and we'll see you then.
Bye.